You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. For more than 25 years, actors and musicians Jack Black and Kyle Gass have been performing as the rock satire band Tenacious D. They've toured around the world, recorded Grammy-winning albums, started a music festival, made a TV show, made a movie, and then made an animated movie. And now they've even put out a new graphic novel called Post-Apocalypto. And today, Kyle and Jack join me on the show as we get into how they've managed to outlast the lifespan of most bands, why they still get nervous before every performance, and how satirizing rock bands has led to their playing with everyone from Metallica to Kid Rock. They reveal how Bob Odenkirk and David Cross gave them their first break, how their movie The Pick of Destiny led to a whole album about its box office failure, and their dream cast for a Tenacious D musical on Broadway. They discuss what it's like to voice every single character and hand-draw every frame of animation for their second film, Post-Apocalypto, how the movie and now the graphic novel Post-Apocalypto address everything from toxic masculinity to Donald Trump, and how being the self-proclaimed world's greatest band gives them a little bit of insight into Trump's narcissism. Plus, the time Kyle had to go on stage with partial facial paralysis, Jack gets a stalker in the middle of the interview, Kyle shares memories of his brief stint as a census taker, and Jack vents about the men's grooming brand that bears his name. Well, sort of. Coming up with Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D in just a moment. Jack Black and Kyle Gass make up the Grammy Award-winning band Tenacious D. In 2018, Tenacious D released their animated film Post-Apocalypto, which was followed by an album and a concert tour. And now they've completed the quadfecta with a brand new Post-Apocalypto graphic novel. Kyle and Jack, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, guys, I got to tell you, this is a lot of fun for me because I've been a big fan of Tenacious D for a long time, as well as of both of you individually. Kyle, you're in pretty much my favorite Seinfeld episode ever, among other things. And Jack, I'm a huge fan of your eponymous men's grooming products. I literally wash my face with you every day.
Okay. Wow.
All right. Now, listen, you've touched on a sore subject.
That's a tough way to start.
Obviously, you haven't done your research. I have no connection whatsoever to the Jack Black creams and lotions. That's another non-existent Jack Black.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a company that decided it was a great name and have threatened to sue me if I ever bring them up. So, next subject.
Is that true?
I guess what I'm saying is I hate Jack Black. Moving on. Next.
Okay. Aside from your personal self-loathing, though, I know that it's not associated with you, but do you ever get people who are like, you know, I loved him in School of Rock, but well-groomed is not the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. I mean, do you think Leonardo DiCaprio would be mad if I just put out some creams and lotions, some Leonardo DiCaprio creams and lotions? No, has nothing to do with the actor. And also, Leo, you ever try to fuck with me? Okay, next subject. Wait a second. I'm sorry to go back. I have to go back to your last comment.
Okay.
I'm suddenly offended. I always might. When I get offended, it's always like a beat later.
Yeah.
But Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong. Did he just say that I'm not associated with creams and lotion. I couldn't be like with like a smooth, soft, silky, soft skin.
Oh, no, he didn't mean that. Not
he didn't
all.
Mean that?
I don't know. Like, I've never touched your skin, so I can't speak to that, really.
When I think of someone who has like beautiful, radiant, smooth, soft skin, the last person in the universe I would think of is Jack Black, that disgusting warthog of a human being. That's what you were saying.
I'm just saying you have many other talents.
Okay.
And thanks
okay.
to your credit.
Okay. You know, I'm hurt, but I'm ready to answer more questions.
Okay. We'll get over it by the end of this, hopefully.
I'll go head-to-head with Leo DiCaprio in creamy skin competition anytime. Anytime.
Now, you guys have been performing as Tenacious D for more than 25 years now. You've actually, I think, outlasted probably by two times most rock bands. What is the secret to the longevity of Tenacious D? And is that true? Was there ever a breakup at some point in those 25 years?
Only every show.
That's right.
Yeah, famously.
Yeah, I've been to a couple of your shows.
I've broken up. I've tried to get out of the band, and it's not possible.
It's actually the rocket fuel of Tenacious D is our constant breaking up and getting back together. It's a lot like sex. In, out.
Friction.
That's interesting. Friction. So that's part of this, like a staple of the act. Because somehow I just thought that I happened to be in the audience the only two nights that you guys actually broke up on stage.
Nothing feels better than breakup sex. Am I right, guys? Was that a gross laugh?
Yeah, it was a creepy laugh.
That was creepy.
What about a new Tenacious D song? Creepy laugh.
That'd be good.
I thought you were going to say breakup sex.
Yeah, why isn't there one? I like that.
What's better?
That's kind of, I think that's also a George Takei song. Breakup sex.
Have you two ever had breakup sex? And was it good?
Pretty personal question. I only remember the makeup sex, and that's awesome. It's like, oh gosh, we're back.
It's a fine line between breakup and makeup sex.
How funny is that?
Okay, so how did you guys meet? Was it Actors Gang, or did you know each other before that?
Well, it was.
Sorry to stump you guys with actual questions here.
No,
we've been asked that question 10,000 times. You think we'd?
And yet you still have
to
pause for a response.
I was 16 years old, and I came over to a mutual friend's house, and there was Cage, a strapping 25-year-old young man, and I was 16 years old, and Kyle was there with an acoustic guitar, and he was singing a duet with a gorgeous young lady by the name of Cynthia Ettinger. And Kyle didn't know that I was in the room, even though there was only four people in the room. He did not care about anything except for Cynthia Ettinger. And he sang to her, and she sang back to him, and it was this lovely duet. And then he left. So I felt like I kind of met him that night, but he wasn't aware of me until years later.
Not true.
But he was in the Actors Gang Theater Company, and they were like the hottest, coolest theater company in Los
Angeles. Tim Robbins, right?
No, yeah. And amongst theater nerds, they were revered and worshipped. Yeah. Even though theater nerds in general are ridiculed at UCLA.
Yeah, you guys have worked with Tim a few times, right? In movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. He's great.
Yeah, Tim Robbins, huge.
Oh, God, yeah.
Huge.
In our movie.
Oh, right. The new one? Yeah. Post-Apocalypto or relatively new?
No.
Oh, who does he voice in that?
He's in the Pick of Destiny.
Right.
He plays the terrifying killer. No, he's not in Post-Apocalypto.
Okay.
In fact, Post-Apocalypto is only me and Kyle. No one else is in
it. Oh, you do?
No other voices.
Wow. It's like a South Park deal. Yeah. You guys do all the voices.
Do South Park do all the voices?
I think so. I think they do. I think all the voices are done by Matt.
No, dude. They had that one dude who was a famous singer, the R&B singer dude.
Well, they've had guests. Who did? I think George Clooney.
Suck on my chocolate salty balls, dude.
Right,
suck on my chocolate salty balls.
Scientology guy. Yeah.
Isaac
Hayes.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, that's true. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Philofax.
Okay, so you have bested them in that category. You do all of the voices in your movie.
Yeah, we sing our own chocolate salty balls songs when we write them. Anyways,
by the way, speaking of Tim Robbins, I have to tell you that Bob Roberts is still one of my favorite movies, and that was one of your first.
I was ahead of its time,
dude. It's like it's coming through.
It's precious.
We got a real life Bob Roberts in the White House.
Yeah,
right
no
now.
Kidding.
It's weird.
Jack became a star with one scene.
Well, that's you know, I had a good little part in Bob Roberts.
You made it good.
But I didn't get like a lot of parts from that.
Oh, really?
I didn't. No, my career didn't. I thought, okay, this is it. Now I'm going to be a star. And that wasn't the case. In fact, it took like another 10 years of scrapping and surviving. And it wasn't until Tenacious D got on HBO that like things really started to heat up for my career. So I actually give it more to Tenacious D, Bob Roberts. But the truth is, I don't think we would have gotten on HBO if I hadn't been in Bob Roberts, because I know Bob and David were big fans of Bob Roberts too.
Bob Odenkirk and David Cross, right?
Things connect. You got little handholds in the industry.
Yeah, I liked the HBO show. What happened to that? You did like what, 3 episodes, but then they didn't bring it back?
Yeah, yeah, well, they were like 6 mini episodes that we packaged as 3 full half hours, but it was a question of creative control. They were like, yeah, we'll do some more, but we're not going to let you guys just do it by yourselves. We're going to have, you know, someone else in the driver's seat. And we weren't into that.
You guys are too dumb.
Yeah.
Basically is what they were saying.
And then we were like, yeah, y'all, fuck y'all. and then we went across the street. We called up Ben Stiller and was like, hey, we know that you like Tenacious D because you approached us about a long time ago, and because he liked Tenacious D, Ben Stiller put us in Cable Guy. Right. I had a big part, and Cage had a little part, but a powerful part. And
thanks,
so then we called up Ben after that TV series on HBO blew up, and we said, hey, do you want to make a Tenacious D movie? And he was like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
And so began like a long development process. Yeah. I think we worked on that for like 3 years or something.
Well, we can tell how long it was, because 99, it was, took 7 years.
7 years. And that came out in what, 2000?
So long.
Is that right?
2006.
Okay.
Right. 99. But I think we had a workable script well before it came out. Like at least came out, so maybe 2005,
like 5 years, probably, yeah,
whatever it was a long time, because as you may know, there will be no D wine until it's D time.
I gotta say, I loved Pick of Destiny, but I know that it didn't exactly break box office records, and you guys kind of made fun of that with your next album, Rise of the Phoenix. I have to wonder, when you were in it, did that setback sting at first, or do you have to get some distance before you could kind of joke about it? Or do you guys just always take things in stride?
It led to a nervous breakdown for me, but it took a while.
Yeah, it burned like a mofo because we were counting our chickens. Who's at my gate? Someone's.
I remember
like Joe Biden is at my front gate. Hold on a second.
He wants your vote.
He's finally gotten out.
I
of the
remember
basement.
At Hello? The at the premiere.
Yeah.
One of the. Mucky Muck studio head guys was like, what? And everyone was like, it just went great. We just watched it. It was just for sure. Their sequel is better.
They turn on you quickly,
I'm
studio execs.
Oh my God, this guy's back.
Do you have a stalker, Jack? I think Jack has a stalker.
I did know, as the movie kind of bombed, so we knew it was good and it would be a cult.
Yeah.
Dude, I hate it when people come. I hate it when people come to my gate and start ringing the bell, and then I
come
say
on
no,
and knock on my
and
door.
Then I say no, I'm sorry, I'm not doing that, and then they ring the bell again.
What was it, Jehovah's Witnesses or what?
I don't want to say because it may make me sound like a bad person.
Oh, okay, maybe Jack Black Cosmetics is doing like an Avon Lady thing
song?
Now.
It's someone. I'm suspicious that they are not what they say they are.
It's
a dude saying, "Hi, I'm from the census. I need to talk to you right away." And then I said, "No, it's not a good time." And then he calls me back and says, "No, it's a good time. I have 4 simple questions that I'd like to ask you." And he's not leaving. He's just standing there.
You got to admire his persistence. Yeah.
I don't believe him. I don't believe he is from the census. Yeah. I think he's some weird creepy dude.
Yeah, that would be a great like conceit census. As a stalker to like come up to your gate and try to talk to you.
See, this is why I didn't want to tell you who it was, because I knew you were going to say, Jack, it's obviously the census. Who would pretend to be a census worker? Well, a lot of people, okay? I'm not a trusting person. But I do support the census. I know it doesn't seem like it.
I did the census. I was a census taker.
Were you really?
90 and 2000.
So did someone come and knock on your door?
Well, I was doing the knocking.
I know, but earlier today, has anyone knocked on your door and says, I'm census guy? I need to talk to you right now.
No, we don't want to count everybody.
No, that's right. Not in this country. Heavens no. Yeah.
No. We knew.
Can you just erase this from the interview? Next question.
What was it like being a census guy, Kyle? I mean, how do people react when you showed up at the door?
They don't want you there. They don't want to see you. You're just, you might as well be door-to-door vacuum salesman.
Yeah, that's messed up that people don't want to be counted.
And then about, one out of five was completely friendly and invite you in. And there'd be like, you'd get sort of short forms, but then one out of five or 10 was the long mm-hmm. form. And that was brutal. Yeah. So many questions.
Come and knock on our door. We've got census for you.
So let me ask you guys, is there an origin story to Tenacious D? Or maybe there's a mythical origin story and a real origin story? What is the background of Tenacious D?
Yeah, there's an origin story. It's called The Pick of
right.
Destiny.
Okay, so I know that version.
you want another version? I was telling you, when I met Kyle, I was in high school, a 16-year-old. And he was serenading right. a young lady. And then I joined Tenacious D. Dude, that creep is still at my front.
Oh, no. Gate. He knows.
He's not leaving.
He knows who's there, by the way.
He's going to call me again?
That is
weird.
He's
not staying for the non-white tiger.
That's why I'm saying I'm suspicious. Anyways.
I was the music guy in the theater. Yeah. And then Jack was the young, new upstart who in the theater. We were doing a play called The Big Show. And... Jack was a crazy musical, I don't know, what do you call it? A phenom?
I don't know. But I wrote some songs, and no one asked me to write the songs. I just said, this show could use some more songs. And I wrote some songs, and I presented them to the theater company. And Tim Robbins was like, it was Mike Schlitt, right?
Yeah.
Mike Schlitt was like, well, I have to admit, these are good, and we're going to put them in the show. And I saw Kyle. He was just fucking bullshit. This is just raw, and unfiltered bullshit.
If you can't beat them, join them.
A couple years later, Kyle finally warmed up to me.
Yeah.
And finally said, okay. Oh, no. All right, come here. True. Get over here. Under this nice, warm, moist wing where I will teach you to play guitar. And I will teach you my ways. In many ways, it was exactly like the movie, yeah. The Pick of Destiny.
Kyle, was he a fast learner? And do you ever worry that the student might surpass the master?
He was. He was complaining about me not teaching him everything. Yeah. So that he could pass. I said, well, I can't do that. I can't sing like you.
You were holding back. There were lessons. But also, let's be honest, I wasn't a very good student. No. I would just play the D chord like for 7 hours in a row. Anyone else would have fucking gone insane.
No.
Killed me. But Kyle had patience, man.
It was a D, A, and E over and over and over again.
You know what else happened during those torture chamber sessions?
What?
A friendship blossomed.
Yeah.
True love.
Yeah. I was thinking that would be the first scene in our musical. So I was thinking the Broadway Tenacious D.
Yeah.
Yes. Musical. We talked of life.
Do you think that might happen? Because I love the mini rock opera that you do at the beginning of Pick of Destiny. Have you ever thought about doing a full-on rock opera for Broadway?
Of course.
When?
Yeah, it would be rad.
When's it going to happen?
And it would be rad to get,
sounds
to
take
get
work.
An incredible cast. Yeah. It would be so fun to get our favorite musical theater peeps in there.
Would you play yourselves or would you cast it?
No, you cast the young. You cast the people so you don't have
to do
Oh, that. Oh, no, we are in the Broadway show of ourselves.
Nope.
I guess, no, on the touring, the first run has got to be us. It's like Lin-Manuel Miranda is no longer in Hamilton, but you got to kick it off. But no, it's quickly replaced by some you never heard of them before.
Josh Gad.
Broadway peeps. Yeah.
Yo,
but
Josh Gad seems obvious for Jack, right?
I think for the next Tenacious D movie, though, if we ever do like you say, another origin story biopic movie, I was thinking of a great cast.
Well, who do you think?
Matt Damon. I want Matt Damon for me.
Yeah.
You always want to get just like the way better looking version of yourself to play you.
Kevin James for me.
No. It's Matt Damon for me. Because I've always felt like I was Fat Damon. And you, I think we go, who's the dude from Cheers?
Woody Harrelson?
Woody Harrelson for you.
Yeah.
See
okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
That's box office gold.
He works bald.
I think from now on in every movie that you do, you should just have a different origin story for every movie, a different, totally different origin story for Tenacious D every time. What do you think about that?
I can't do that. You got to write what you know. That's the first rule of writing.
Although you can go the other way. Yeah. Like Bob Dylan would make up a different bio every time he did an interview.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Now, you know, people have described Tenacious D as acoustic rock, comedy rock, heavy metal, mock rock. How do you guys describe yourselves?
I'm going to say folk metal.
Okay. I can see that.
I'm going to say comedy folk metal.
Comedy folk metal. Okay.
Wait. Jazzettle. No, that's jazz metal.
That's pretty good. I could go with that. Actually, what is Gisettle?
I think we're somewhere between classic rock and, well, there is a bit of metal, mm-hmm. but there's also a little bit of prog.
Yeah.
We got some prog.
Yeah. But then there's a little bit of David Gates or something in there. I don't know. It can be pretty soft sometimes.
I think it's Prettle.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll return with more when we come back in just a moment.
Were you guys more influenced by the legit metal bands or by parody bands like Weird Al? Like, what do you consider yourselves more?
Oh, I wasn't into metal at all.
Oh, no? Okay.
No, not at all.
No, but I did introduce Kyle to Metallica. Mm-hmm. That was an early influence on Tenacious D. And you always loved Zeppelin. I didn't introduce
it's true.
You to, and you,
true.
Got, you
I
a lot
did
of people
like
will
the
say
rock.
They, yeah, well, Zeppelin, the you rock. Might it's controversial. You might not say that they are metal, but they were like right there.
I know.
They were right next to Black Sabbath, right next door.
Well, just, you know, they would pull out the acoustics a lot though. Mm-hmm.
So like, just a tiny bit more Satan and they would have been metal.
Yeah. They needed a little Satan in their salad. A little bit more safe.
By the way, speaking of influences, I just have to say, I heard somewhere that Kanye West claims that Tenacious D was a big influence on him. And I wonder how you feel about that. Because I don't know what's going on with him these days. He's like a tent revival preacher and all this now.
Well, he was right before he started supporting Trump.
Yeah.
We were a big influence on him. Yeah.
Okay, so you don't claim him as a disciple now. Then.
I don't know if he said that. He gave us a shout out in a concert one time that was on YouTube.
He said, I'm having my Tenacious D moment. I'm having my Jack Black moment.
I was stoked because I actually am a huge fan of Kanye West. And even though he seems to have gone completely off the deep end, he's gone off the rails on a crazy train. I still love his music. I wouldn't change my opinion on his genius. I actually think he's a genius. Yeah. And the fact that he, you know, likes us or dug us at one time or another is that's a tremendous feather in our cap, in my opinion.
And I love how you guys totally commit to the conceit of Tenacious D, that it's the world's greatest rock band. And I have to wonder, when you're about to go on stage, do you have to like yell at yourself in the mirror or something, or psych yourself up to get in that headspace of the world's greatest band?
We do have rituals. Oh, yeah. We don't look in the mirror, but we look into each other's eyes, deep into each other's souls. A lot of times when we're going out there, there's a terror that overtakes us. And a thing we often say is a loophole. And as soon as Kyle says loophole, he knows that I know exactly what he's talking about. And he's saying, is there a way to not go on stage right now? Is there a way?
we can cancel this whole thing.
Maybe there's too many people. Maybe there's some fire marshal problems in this venue. is there any way we can not go out there right now? Because the terror is real.
The terror is real.
Even after all these years, we still have horrifying stage fright.
You still get nervous. But, wow, that's amazing. I mean,
there's a voice in the back of our head saying, no, once we get out there, this terror will subside and we will actually, believe it or not, enjoy ourselves. And we look into each other's eyes and we let each other know that we're there for each other. It's, you know, it's similar to going into battle. Yeah. There's a fight or flight response. Not that I've ever gone into battle. What the fuck am I talking about? But I imagine it's like going to battle because, there's no other way to describe that kind of fear of a crowd. Yeah. You're going in front of like thousands of people. What if they don't like you? What if, you know?
Yeah.
And I know it's irrational. Never goes away. No one's going to try to kill you. But it's there.
Yeah, I always hear this from comedians. I'll hear some version of like the dream of most comedians is that the theater or the performance space will catch fire. And the owner will, or there'll be a flood or something, and they'll say, okay, here's your check. Sorry you can't go on tonight. And they can go home and go back to the hotel early or something like that.
It's weird, though, because once we're out there rocking and the crowd is feeling it, there's no better feeling. And we come off stage just like a high. There's no, so it's so weird that terror and that ecstasy are right next to each other. But in terms of like, getting into the mental state of like being the best band in the world and psyching ourselves.
Yeah, that's a whole other level.
Didn't John Lennon say like, there's no point in being in a band unless you think you're the best in the world. There's inherently a kind of narcissism that goes with rock and roll performing. Mm. You fucking have to think you are the best shit in the world for it to work at all.
Yeah.
No one. Yeah, it's hard to get up there. Yeah. Really. I don't know.
It's weird though that the things have kind of come full circle for you guys, because you started out as sort of this send up of these rock bands like Metallica, but then you've now performed with some pretty big bands yourself. I don't mean big bands like Glenn Miller or something, but like I mean like really really huge well known rock bands. Who all have you played with by now?
We opened for Tool.
Dude, we opened for Metallica. What are you talking about?
We opened for Metallica many times, 3, 4, 5 times.
I'm not going to say many times, but I will say a handful of times. And those were good times, dude. Dude, our biggest crowd ever in Germany was right before Metallica at a festival called Rock Am Ring.
Oh, man.
There was 100,000 people. Yeah. It was an ocean of people.
Wow.
And they were all there to see Metallica. And yet, we won them over.
Really?
It was a triumph.
I mean, doesn't stuff get lost in the translation with you guys, though?
You know what? They were weirdly primed and ready for us. Germany was like, there was a crazy alignment of the planets when we went out there, because there was this resurgence of tribute, you know, like 10 years or how many years after that first album did we go to Germany and open for Metallica?
Okay, yeah, like 15
years later. Yeah, it was so much. But they had just like discovered us weirdly. And so they were celebrating us like we were this brand new band. And we're like, oh, okay, well, let's ride this wave. And now, oh, my God, we're going on before Metallica. And suddenly we were having this, like, life moment. And the irony was that right as we were having this highest of highs of Tenacious D, Cage had this horrible, like, thing that happened. I don't even know if I should say it.
I woke up in the bus and half my face was paralyzed. And I thought, oh my God, I just had a stroke.
We didn't know what it was. We thought, oh no, this could be something serious.
I didn't want to tell anybody because I wanted that paycheck from Rock and Ring.
And there was a doctor there who was like, I am looking after the symptoms. It could be a couple different things. It could be that you are just having a little bit of palsy. It could be even more serious. We want to give you a spinal tap, but there's no reason that you can't go and play the show right now first. So I was like, dude, it's up to you. Should we cancel? And you were like, no, there's so much to go on. Hey, guys, band meeting. You see this guy over here? That's a fucking hero. That's Kyle motherfucking Gass. It looks like he's never going to fucking walk again, but he's ready to go out there and rock one last time. Are you guys ready? And we go out there and have like one of the best shows of all time. But Kyle is suffering because one of his ears doesn't work.
It ended up being Bell's palsy. Really? And I didn't know that at the time. But one of the things is like your eardrum doesn't shut again automatically. Yeah. So it's letting in all the volume.
And I was looking around and saying, someone, it's too loud. It's too loud. And yeah. Oh, no.
Well, that can mess with your balance, too, can't it?
Oh, yeah.
But in the meantime, there's 100,000 Germans just orgasming with pleasure at our set. We finish the set. We go off. We go straight to a hospital. Kyle gets a spinal tap, and it doesn't work. And the lady is like, I don't know. I'm not finding the right part of spine.
She's
stabbing him in the back repeatedly, and he's like, stop! It's like a fucking torture chamber.
The most pain I've ever felt.
And then we finally, I don't know what happens. They finally go, forget it, or don't worry about it. It's probably just Bell's palsy. And we leave there. And it turns out it was just Bell's palsy. And thank God. And so there's a good lesson here. If one day you wake up and you're like, face is partially paralyzed, don't worry. It might just be little of the old Bell's palsy. And it passes after a couple of months.
It does pass. About 10%. It stays.
Jack, are all of your impersonations of Germans basically either a male or female version of Arnold Schwarzenegger?
He's Austrian.
Which ironically, he's Austrian, so it's not even an accurate, but... that's basically the extent of my.
Well,
I go with more of a Hogan's Hero.
I want to talk some more about this great graphic novel, Post Apocalypto. As I mentioned, it follows the album, the tour, and the animated movie. When did you start toying with the idea of doing an animated movie?
Well, after we finished Rise of the Phoenix, our triumphant comeback mm-hmm. album, we were starting to think about like what's our next project going to be, and we like the idea of doing an animated series because we had been seeing some other people just kick ass, mm-hmm. like South Park. They're just killing it. And also, Rick and Morty and some of our favorite comedic shows. And we're like, fuck, man, what a great way to not grow old. Cause we're not as sexy and photogenic as we once were. And we're like, I don't really love being on camera. Let's do a cartoon version of ourselves. That's mm-hmm. kind of where it came from. And also, I love to draw and doodle.
Yeah, and it says here that, Jack, you did all the animation for the movie and the artwork for this graphic novel. So you drew all of this yourself?
It's not technically animation. Really, it's a slideshow. And it's just a series of drawings. Me and Cage would improvise the storyline. We would work out the story beats and then just go in and record it. And then John Spiker, our producer, would edit it down to little bite-sized chunks, on episode length. And then I would go off and draw the pictures to the sound. That was our process. And yeah, I drew fucking thousands of drawings.
Wow.
And I have to say, it was a long time-consuming process, but
yeah.
Really enjoyed it. I really loved it.
So at no point you thought about going the professional route and hiring an artist to do this, huh?
Well, we ended up with Jack doing it after we did like a storyboard and pitched it to these animation houses.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, wait, this is what Jack is doing is funnier. It's so funny and it works.
Yeah.
And it was great to do it all in-house DIY, and
mm-hmm.
even though it was a lot of work for Jack.
Yeah, sounds like it.
It was really quite satisfying, though. It was
good. But that's the beauty of like this guerrilla production. That's how it is now. I love that artists, they're not confined by the entertainment gatekeepers anymore, and an actor or just a regular Joe can go make their own thing and put it out there and find an audience for something.
That's awesome. Yeah.
How much of the dialogue was written versus improv? Was there a lot of improv in there?
100%. I think it was 100% improv. Yeah.
Oh, really? You work off an outline or something?
Well, yeah. I mean, we would talk about story beats and about the general trajectory of the piece. And once we decided on what the next episode would basically be about, we would just jump in the recording booth. Kyle would be in that booth, I'd be in this booth, and we'd just press record and we would start acting in the scenes. And all of that was just improvised. And then we would write the songs, right, Case? I don't even remember which order.
Yeah, then I think Spiker would put something together, and then we'd come back and give him some notes, and then yeah, when we got like a 7 to 10 minute thing, then we'd figure out a song for it.
Now, had you guys been wanting to do a graphic novel also all along, or was this just the next logical step? Because I guess you already had the story and the artwork.
The project really seemed like kind of a graphic novel to start with. I mean, like Jack was saying, it wasn't really animation. It was really more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's
a slideshow graphic novel.
Yeah. It's not 24 frames per second. I don't know. No. What would it be? I'm not sure.
It's just if you want to create a world and you don't want to spend any money, draw it.
Oh, that.
Yeah.
It was pretty incredible, the setup we had.
If we really tried to bring that whole thing to life in live action, it could have cost a.
Yeah,
literally trillions of dollars.
Post-apocalypto does come at the perfect time, though, because I feel like we may be living in the end times, depending on which way this election goes. How much of this movie and the graphic novel were created as a response to Trumpism?
Completely,
100%. We weren't going to make post-apocalypto. We were going to make a different album, a whole different theme, different concept, and we're hoping to go back to that actually. After this election, then we can finally but once he became president, we're like, we can't make an album about anything else. It would seem like we're ignoring the fucking elephant in the room. We have to make this end of the world thing, because I think it might be the end of the world. And so we just started a road warrior-esque. It also happened to be one of our favorite genres of film, post-apocalyptic action adventure. They're just all the best. Terminator, Road Warrior.
Yeah.
Okay, those are the only two that come to mind. Those are the two best movies. I think we can agree. Those are the two best movies ever made.
Okay. Well, you've completed the trilogy then. And I love, by the way, your depiction of Don Jr. in this movie and in the graphic novel, because it's exactly what I imagine him to be. Just this arrogant little spoiled bitch who has nothing of his own to his credit and surfs along on his dad's dubious accomplishments, always punching down and picking on the little guy. I wonder, do you know if you ever saw the movie, or have you heard any kind of reaction from Don Jr.?
I've heard zero reaction, but I assume he's at least heard of it.
Yeah.
He must have heard about it.
I mean, you must be kind of insulted, because these guys react to everything.
Yeah. You know,
surprised.
Yeah.
I'm happy not to have to respond. It would have helped. I think he knows it would have really helped sell records and units and books if he ever did mention us, is probably why he
give
us the sunlight. But you know, I was stoked because we did that, and that was just, you know, the voice that came out when it was time to do Don Jr.'s voice. And then we saw that movie. Have you seen this incredible Taika Waititi movie, Jojo Rabbit?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah.
Where Taika Waititi plays Hitler. And the way he plays him is very similar to the way I play Don Jr., which is just a spoiled brat.
Yeah.
And the idea of dictator equals spoiled brat child is so right on the nugget, so right on the money, and so important right now. That movie, Jojo Rabbit, I think is should be on everyone's top 10 list of movies to watch before this election. Because it's you nailed it.
Totally.
When the adults are in the room, dictators fucking will fade away.
Yeah,
hopefully that's the hopeful take.
Do you sort of think that you understand Donald Trump's narcissism? Because Tenacious D is so over the top, calling yourselves the world greatest band and all that. Do you have a tiny window into his psyche, maybe?
You know, it's funny you say that, because I have thought about that a lot. That we come from, you know, narcissism and comedic narcissism, but also just some good old plain old fashioned narcissism. Like, there's nothing we like more than doing a show and then just basking in the glory after and saying, you know that part where you played that lick and then you looked at the audience and you smiled and they laughed? It's like, we're disgusting when we really start masturbating about our own genius. Yeah. And there is an element of that to Trump and Trumpism. It's that narcissism, just loving your own bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of our book, too. It's like, at the end of the day, you got to look in the mirror and say, yeah, it's easy to point at Trump and say, what a poisonous piece of shit. But you got to look in the mirror and say, what kind of poison shittiness do I have of that? Because I think we all need to do a little self-reflection in this time moving forward. Yeah. I hate to say it, but Michael Jackson was right.
I'm looking at the man in the mirror.
Oh, yeah. I'm asking him to change.
Oh, God. You know, before we go, I have to, by the way, tell you that I was a huge fan of Festival Supreme. And I know it's been on a hiatus even before the pandemic. Do you think it will ever be revived and come back?
Never say never.
Yeah.
You know,
or maybe a digital version now. I don't know.
Our genius manager, like our manager, Michelle, is saying she really wants to bring it back, a virtual version of it.
Exactly what you're saying.
Oh, nice.
Thinking about it.
I'd love that.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work and effort. But yeah, maybe.
I'm sure.
This time.
If you want to help organize it.
It sure was fun to do.
Hell, why not? It was fun. It was such a great moment.
Every year, we did it for 4 years. Every year, we had the best lineup.
Oh, yeah.
The best festival. And it just didn't translate to like numbers. It's like, where the hell are the audiences? Because these shows are getting better and better.
Yeah.
And the audience numbers were dwindling, less and less people. And it was like,
well, that shocked there was a little bit of an LA lineup. Phenomenon. There was actually a lot of people there, but at the end, it was like, well, we're not going to sell out. So everybody's friends, just come on down. We need people.
It was like, it started off, we played to like 12,000 people on the Santa Monica Pier, and then it was 10,000, then it was 8,000, then it was 6,000. Then it was like, Now we're going to do it. The show must go on. We're doing it at Largo, and it's going to be a little, but it's going to be, fuck it.
Going the wrong way.
But the truth is, I think it's kind of like the pick of destiny where over time, people look back and remember, wait a second, that was actually the best
thing that ever happened. I do. I loved it.
Yeah.
And I love that you had the Concords there, Flight of the Concords. Is there any kind of a rivalry between D and the Concords? Because I feel like there ought to be. Maybe a battle of bands or something.
It's a one-way rivalry.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
They never acknowledged our existence, but we were really stoked that we got them at Festival Supreme because we've been trying to get a collab going for, well, ever since they, you know, came into existence. Yeah. We're like, wait, you guys.
Come on,
cool New Zealand version of us. Let's let's get this thing together, and it never happened. But
instead, they just hired our accountant.
The Conks. And dude, have you checked out what they do in the shadows?
Oh, I love that. Yeah, the movie or the show? I've seen both, and I love both.
I've only seen the movie, but there's
a series now on FX. Yeah,
you haven't seen the series?
Yeah, but they're not in the series. That's the weird thing.
No, yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of missing a little something.
Have you seen the movie?
Oh, yeah, I love the movie. God, the movie's hilarious.
You haven't seen the
movie? Don't have to. No, the series.
Oh, my God.
Series.
Oh, Kyle, missing.
No, you. No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
You really
like the movie. I'm sorry for you. Yeah.
Well, folks, you really need to go order this graphic novel, Post-Apocalypto. Yes. It's very nicely done. It's actually beautiful and a collector's item, I think. And I think if you go to Tenacious D website, you can actually get an autographed copy, right? Is that true?
Right.
You still have those?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome. And I should also mention that there's an audio version. And for anyone who watched the Post-Apocalypto movie to the very end, there's a great little Easter egg at the end of the audio book as well. Well, Jack Black and Kyle Gass, it's been great. Thanks so much for chatting with me, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thanks again to Tenacious D for coming on the show. Order their new graphic novel, Post-Apocalypto, on Amazon, Audible, or wherever books are sold, and keep up with the band at tenaciousd.com. You can also follow Jack and Kyle individually on Twitter at Jack Black and at Gas Leak. That's gas with two S's. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.